Next week, as we discussed earlier, we're celebrating Shavuot. Although we're talking about Shavuot today. But it's the conclusion of first fruits. So I'd like to talk about that a little bit. It's an important thing to discuss because it's not something which most people pay a whole lot of attention to. First fruits is counting. It's a process of counting. Counting to 50. Plus a whole lot more in certain way, in certain other areas, which we won't be able to get into today, but hopefully it'll be enjoyable for you. First of all, ask you a few questions. What is a first fruit, physically? Does anybody know what a first fruit is? So it's a basic question.
The first of anything.
First of anything.
All
right. That's what's picked first. That's true. So, go ahead.
It could be a first child, the first...
First child, exactly. It could be a first child.
It can be the first fruit off the tree, the first grain out of the field.
So, we're going to discuss a lot of different first fruits. By these few items we just had, and Jeff just mentioned, there's a lot of different fruits, first fruits, aren't there? You can have a first fruit of one item, and yet there's another item over here, different tree, different a plant, has its own first fruit. They're separate. But they're still both first. The counting the first fruits is very important to God. It's a process in which He counts us. That's who He's counting. He's counting people. It's for us to pay attention to and to watch and to look at. We want to be counted. Okay. Get my little notes out here. There are a lot of first fruits we rattle off. Is every first fruit one of God's first fruits? Is everybody who is born first, does that mean God selects them?
No.
No, it's not. What about fruit off the tree? Let's say I've got an apple tree. It's got, God blessed it and had 1,000 apples on it. Maybe a little much for an apple tree. The first one I pick. Is that necessarily the best one? No, it's not. What if the first one I pick has, you know, a worm in it, some contaminated part, it's not ripe? All those things happen, don't they?
Yeah, it happens quite often around here. The winemakers go out and they pick grapes and taste them. Not ready yet.
Exactly. The first one's not always necessarily the first. So, if that applies to crops, and applies to people picking crops, does it apply to God picking people?
It must, because He oftentimes did not pick the firstborn.
Exactly. And sometimes the ones He did pick weren't very good. And He rejected them, which we were going through today.
Saul
is the key one. Esau is one of them. There are various ones that came first that He said, this is not the right one. Choose again. So He does the same thing that we do. The first one He chooses is not necessarily the best one to choose. Not that it's a bad one. It's usually designed, it winds up with perfect lessons for us. So that's helpful, but it still happens. And we're going to discuss a few of them today. So we're going to start out, what is the benefit in God's eyes of someone being a first fruit? What does it gain? What's the object? Could anybody be a first fruit? What does it gain that person if He chooses you to be a first fruit? What's in it for them? It's just being, I get a number. Oh, that's great. Thanks God for my number. Okay, I go sit down.
It also comes with a lot of responsibility.
Oh, what responsibilities are included in being chosen as a first fruit or chosen being counted? Can you think of any of them?
To live a righteous life.
Righteous life. That's an important one.
Blessing.
Yeah, there's a blessing to go along with them. There are leadership that goes along with it. Responsibilities, obviously. These are all responsibilities. So, in the selection that God's choosing for His selecting people, what is it that that person's receiving? Let's put another way. Another word to get differently. Selecting a first fruit or selecting a first child, as we just discussed, there are responsibilities that go along with that. What responsibilities are they? Being a leadership is vague. God's more specific than that.
Well,
What responsibilities is he actually selecting people for?
Is that like inheritance? Is that the...
Yeah, inheritance is an important one. What inheritance is he after?
As an authority.
As an authority. There's a responsibility that goes with inheritance and authority.
Yeah, because, you know, you get this idea of anointing, which kind of often goes along with that. And when you anoint people, it's often for a specific purpose, such as, you know, David was to be anointed out of his family to be king. It wasn't
right.
King at that moment. In fact, it was quite a while
later. Right, it took many years later, but yes.
But he was the youngest of the brothers.
That's right.
He was a flexible, exactly. He was a young brother, out of the order.
Well,
so, go ahead, Pat.
Joseph was picked, but...
Yes, he was.
He...
Do something different, though. He's picked. He wasn't designed to be king, was he?
No,
he has his own...
He became the provider
of his
whole
family.
The provision for all Egypt, plus all of the other, probably all the people around them, make his own tribe as well.
And his son, his youngest son, does it again, Ephraim. Yes, Kathy.
Are they not responsible for making sure that the rest of the siblings, whatever
the family
follows after righteousness and God's Torah?
That is a key fundamental when God selects the first fruit. She's absolutely right. The inheritance is also very important. Because if I have a firstborn child, which I do, he's sitting over there, there are certain things I want from him. There are certain things I want for him. I want him to obviously grow up as an upright individual. I want God to bless him, to pour out with a wonderful wife, with good children, all those various things. But there's one thing that me as his father have the ability to impart to him. It's my belief in God. It's something which it doesn't get given to him by anybody else. Because it's how God talks to me and what I can give to him in that relationship. Well, God's no different. He did the exact same thing with Abraham, which we're going to go to first. We're going to start out in Genesis. Yes, it's part of the Torah, but that's okay. I'll only be there for a few minutes. Hopefully it won't get back to Richard. Let's see. Yeah, goodbye. Yeah, I appreciate that. Let's start out, let's see here, Genesis chapter 12, verse 1 through 3, the beginning, as far as Israel is concerned, because yes, technically it's Genesis chapter 1, but this is a different kind of beginning. It says, Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, this is God calling out Abraham, this is the beginning of the inheritance and responsibility and taking care of all of Israel. The Lord said to Abram, "Get out of your country, from your kindred, and from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great. And you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. In you all families of the earth shall be blessed." I'm going to stop there for a minute. This is just the beginning. He does a couple more amendments as we go through Abram's life. What is it that he's promising to Abraham? What is Abraham's inheritance in this statement?
A great name.
A great name. A great nation.
Blessing.
I will bless you.
And blessing to the nation.
That's the first thing that God promises to Abraham. That's the first inheritance. As he points out, bless those who bless you. This is an ongoing thing. Curse those who curses you. All the families of the earth. It is a giving of inheritance from generation to generation. It doesn't stop when Abraham dies. It continues on. It's an inheritance that is given from the first one chosen, which in this case was Abram, to his son Isaac, not Ishmael. But God chose Isaac as the recipient of this inheritance. And it continues on again. Instead of Esau, it was Jacob that was the recipient of this inheritance. There are other inheritances that are around, but this is one that God established. Now, he does more than just this. So, continue on the next part of the inheritance that God has promised to Abraham. is in Genesis 13, verses 14 through, well, practically right there, 14 through 17. There's another promise, an inheritance portion. And the Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated him, lift your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward. For all the land which you see, I give to you and your descendants forever. And I'll make your descendants as the dust of the earth. So that if a man could number the dust of the earth, then your descendants also could be numbered. Arise, walk in the land, through its length and through its width, for I give it to you. What was in this part of the inheritance that he's now blessing? The land, actual territory. This is physical property that belongs to God. Of course, he made the earth. He has a choice who he gives what to, but this belongs to, and this is part of the original inheritance he promised Abraham to get out of your country. I will bless you, make you great, and I will give you this land. There's more than just this inheritance. God adds to it. In Genesis 15, he extends that inheritance. Actually, more just elaborates a little bit. 15, verses 17 through 21. And it came to pass when the sun went down, it was dark, behold, there was smoke in the oven, a burning torch to pass between those pieces. Now, this is a little bit of background. This is a covenant that God is writing with Abraham and himself. Abraham, of course, had fallen asleep earlier because God made him pass out. So we come with Abraham saying, okay, to your descendants, verse 18, I have given this land from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates. The Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Kadmonites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Rephaim, the Amorites, Canaanites, the Gershites, the Jebusites. He just extended this territory that he's promising to Abram. It's an inheritance. It has gotten bigger. It was what he saw, north, south, east, and west. Well, it's all the way to the Euphrates River, which you cannot see from Israel. I don't know if you are aware of that, but the curvature of the earth does not allow you to see the Euphrates River from Israel. It's not physically possible. So he's actually extended it much further than the original inheritance. So as God passes on and selects his first fruits, his selection of people he is choosing, he's chosen Abram, obviously, and he extends this to Isaac. And through this promise, he extends to all your descendants. Now, did this extend all the way to Ishmael as well? Ishmael is a descendant.
No, but he has a different blessing.
No, he has a different blessing. It's the ones which God chooses that this inheritance follows through, not just anybody. All right? Abraham had quite a few children, actually. The Bible doesn't list them all off. We know of Isaac and Ishmael. Well, he actually gets married after Sarah dies. And he has more children. Do they get this inheritance? Absolutely not. They weren't chosen by God. They weren't selected. We'll continue on. Actually, I'm going to skip a little bit further ahead than I wanted to. Genesis chapter 25. This is an example of an individual that should have received the inheritance. He got a different inheritance, but he should have received this one, and he didn't. 25, verses 29 through 34. This is Esau and Jacob. Now Jacob cooked the stew, and Esau came into the field. He was very weary. And Esau said to Jacob, please feed me with that same red stew, for I am very weary. Therefore his name was called Edom, red. But Jacob said, sell me your birthright as of this day. And Esau said, look, I am about to die, so what profit shall this birthright be to me? Then Jacob said, swear it to me as of this day. So he swore to him, and he sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils. Then he ate and drank, arose, and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. What was the birthright? We're just talking about this.
The inheritance.
Now, most of you know the story of Jacob. As he has to leave. He flees from the blessings and he has to leave. So, is Esau's birthright he sold to Jacob, did that include the property of like flocks and herds that Abram owned? Or, sorry, Isaac owned? No, it did not. Because that wasn't what God gave to Abraham. In the blessing which we read earlier, which God has given to Abraham, his inheritance, did that include flocks? No, flocks weren't listed at all. Land was. There was a descendants being increased, people being increased, land, money, flocks weren't. And that's actually exactly what happened. When Jacob left to Laban's house and returned home and ran across Esau, where did all of Isaac's property go? All of his physical stuff regarding the flocks, regarding the money? Well, Esau had them. So the birthright he sold here, what birthright was it? It was God's birthright that God was give away to the next descendant. He wasn't selling his ownership or stake of being being Isaac's firstborn son, which is property ownership. It was land. And what happened? Where did Esau go? He can't stay there because he doesn't get to own the land. He had to leave. He went to a mountain further east. I don't remember the name off the top of my head, but eventually it turns into Edom, which is a good portion of the Middle East today. But he couldn't inherit that property. Why? Because he sold it to Jacob. It wasn't money he was selling. It wasn't flocks he was selling. It was the inheritance that God would give to Esau. There's a reason why God says, Esau I hated and Jacob I loved. It's not because Esau, because they were born and, oh, well, you know, God, I can't stand this kid. He's an infant. Esau didn't love God. So why should God love him? Esau despised God and thought, well, God's inheritance is worthless. So why should God bless him? Well, don't get me wrong, he did. Esau was a strong man. He had lots of money and lots of descendants, but not the inheritance that God promised Abraham. Esau was not a first fruit. He was not firstborn, meaning in God's eyes. He wasn't the one that God selected. He was not counted. As I mentioned earlier, there are other examples. You have, obviously, Saul. Selected initially, rejected later on. Esau being a firstborn, normally, he gets the selection. That's his. The birthright goes to him. He didn't want it. So God takes it back and gives it to Jacob. It's a fundamental process. Just because you physically are firstborn and theoretically it belongs to you doesn't necessarily mean it's yours. And it doesn't mean it's always going to be yours. You can lose it. We're going to learn about that as well as we continue on. So, of course, we know most of the story, Genesis, and the basics regarding it. We're going to move on to Exodus because I'm going to go through every example of a firstborn. It takes forever and you'd be on it for days, not weeks. So, when we are where God starts physically saying, all right, I'm going to choose this one versus that one. This goes into Exodus. This is Exodus chapter 4. Chapter 4, verses 22. Actually, let's back up a little bit. Let's include... Let's go 18 through 23. So Moses is being returned to Egypt after talking to God with the burning bush. So Moses went, turned to Jethro, his father-in-law, and said to him, "Please let me go, return to my brethren who are in Egypt, and see whether they are still alive." And Jethro said to Moses, "Go in peace." And the Lord said to Moses in Midian, "Go, return to Egypt, for all the men are dead who sought your life." Then Moses took his wife, his sons, set them on a donkey, and he returned to the land of Egypt. And Moses took the rod of the God in his hand. And the Lord said to Moses, "When you go back to Egypt, see that you do all those wonders before the Pharaoh which I have put in your hand. But I will harden his heart so that he will not let the people go. Then you shall say to Pharaoh, 'Thus says the Lord, Israel is my son, my firstborn. So I say to you, let my son go, that he may serve me.' If you refuse to let him go, indeed, I will kill your son, your firstborn." This is the state where God is physically saying, taking claim. All right, Israel. Now, this is not an individual anymore, is it? Israel was Jacob. Well, now it's not. God has selected actually a group of people to be his firstborn. Instead of individuals. See, Abram was individual. Isaac was an individual. Jacob was. Esau, of course, was. They're all individuals we're dealing with. Now we're dealing with groups of people. In this case, a whole nation. A whole nation being God's firstborn? Well, actually, he expanded as the time goes on. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's not everybody in that nation necessarily. They can lose it, which we're going to read about. You can lose your firstborn. You can God can count you at one point, and then later on in your life say, you know what? I'm removing my counting of you and dispose of you. So you can lose it. You can lose the birthright, lose the right of God blessing you, which we all want. We all want to be counted, right? That's a fundamental idea of obeying God, is to be called one of his own, to be counted and included in them. That's the goal. So this is where God's saying, all right, let them go. Of course, he's using in singular form, which is Israel as a whole. It's a nation, which you can do that sometimes. Singular form, to worship him. If not, of course, he'll take Pharaoh's firstborn son. So we continue on. Because though all of Israel's firstborn, not necessarily all of them are the right choice to be firstborn. Meaning, firstborn, as we mentioned earlier, has requirements. They have authority. They have responsibilities that go with their inclusion, with their counting process. Well, not all of them can do that. Not all of them should do that. The various responsibilities are included. So God refines his selection. Israel as a nation is firstborn amongst nations. Well, who's firstborn amongst Israel? There's more than just one tier of firstborn. As we mentioned earlier, there's firstborn of apples, there are firstborn of strawberries, there's firstborn of wheat, of people. We all have a variety of firstborns, aren't there? Well, God has a lot of firstborn here. Messiah's a firstborn. He's got a lot of them. There's a whole bunch of firstborns that he selected. So we're going to move on. Continue on to, let's see, might check my notes here, a little scribbly. Exodus 13. We're just going through the process of God's selecting and choosing who he wants, getting more refined in his selection of firstborn. 13 verses 2. The Lord said to Moses, saying, sanctify to me all the firstborn, whoever opens a womb among the children of Israel, both of man, beast, man, and animal, it is mine. Okay, well that's more of the fundamental idea of firstborn, but so does that mean he's excluding the secondborn? Well, sort of. He's actually setting up the stage for replacement. In numbers, he replaces them. See, the idea is that God is not only doing things, but he's teaching them at the same time. If I do something to you or for you, all I have accomplished is just did a task. But if I set the stage for you, if I set the stage for my son that he goes through a process of learning, by the end, yeah, I did the same. The results are the same. But he learns through the steps. So this is where God is selecting Israel. All right, Israel, this is what a firstborn is defined as. But about a month later, he replaces them and says, instead of this group of firstborn, which is what I defined, I'm taking this group in your place called Levites, which we're going to get there. This is takes place in Numbers chapter 3. Actually, he mentions it a couple of times. We're just going to go through two of them. Numbers chapter 3, verses 12 through 13. Since he already defined the firstborn of what he said they were, now we're going to expand, we're going to refine the definition. Well, verse 11. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, now behold, I myself have taken the Levites from among the children of Israel instead of every firstborn who opens the womb among the children of Israel. Therefore, the Levites shall be mine. So right now, he just defined what the firstborn was in the earlier part of Exodus. Now he's saying, I'm taking replacement of. So somebody can be a firstborn instead of you, though you may be still counted. So he's a firstborn of a firstborn, and you can actually be exchanged. The idea of being exchanged is unique. And Jacob and Esau, it is unheard of, the firstborn child not receiving the whole inheritance. That's absurd. Actually, in some culture at the time, it was technically illegal. Not in Israel's culture, but at that time it was illegal for not having the firstborn taken care of. So that was unusual to have an exchange happen. Well, now he's exchanging a whole group of people. The inheritance, God has selected Israel up being firstborn amongst nations, but they themselves have firstborn inside of themselves. And those firstborn get exchanged. And here, he points out, therefore Levi shall be mine. Verse 13, because all the firstborn are mine, on the day I struck all the firstborn of Egypt, the land of Egypt, I sanctified to myself all the firstborn in Israel, both man and beast, they shall be mine, I am the Lord. He repeats himself again in Numbers 8. I realize I'm jumping around a little bit here, going through, but it gets the point across, because we're expanding our definition. Actually, we're just reviewing God's definition, technically. Numbers chapter 8. Verses 16 and 18. Actually, let's include verse 15 as well. After that, the Levites shall go into the service, tabernacle meeting. So you shall cleanse them and offer them as though they waved the offering. For they are wholly given to me from among the children of Israel. I have taken them for myself instead of all who opened the womb, the firstborn of all the children of Israel. For all my firstborn among the children of Israel are mine, both man and beast. On the day I struck Egypt, the firstborn of the land of Egypt, all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, I sanctified them to myself. I have taken the Levites instead of all the firstborn of the children of Israel. Now, we're repeating it, right? How many times does God repeat this? Well, let's see. We did it in Numbers, once or twice, and he does it twice here. What's the fundamental rule? The Bible repeats itself. Why?
It's important.
It's an emphasis. He can say it once, it's good enough, but he's repeating it because it's important for them to get this lesson. It doesn't stop here. Because amongst firstborns, that means, well, I'm not a Levite. I doubt any of us in this room are Levites. But you might have some ancestor way back when that may have been, who knows. But the likelihood's pretty slim. So it looks to me like we're all excluded. Right? So it appears. All of us are excluded. We can't be it. We can't be counted because God has replaced us. These are Levites and Levites alone. But we're talking about God. You don't necessarily have to be a Levite for God to select you. He selected David. David, by the definition of, was not a Levite. And yet he was still selected. Actually, God explicitly states so. That he selected it. Let's see. I'll go there. David, of course, records a lot of songs which he wrote, or psalms. He discusses it, and this is the point which God selects David as a firstborn. This is Psalms 89. Not that you have to turn those. I'm going to read out there anyway. Won't be there for very long. Verse 24 through 29. But my faithfulness and my mercy shall be with him. My name, his horn, shall be exalted. Right, in my name, his horn shall be exalted. Also I will set his hand over the sea, and his right hand over the rivers. He shall cry to me, you are my Father, my God, and the rock of my salvation. And I also will make him my firstborn, the highest of the kings of the earth. My mercy will keep him forever. My covenant shall stand firm with him. His seed also I will make to endure forever, and his throne as the days of heaven. Now, this is a psalm that David wrote. Well, sorry, Ethan wrote. Now, we already know that most of the psalms referring to David seem to also parallel reference to the Messiah, right? Mm-hmm. That seems to be pretty consistent. But David, we already know, was counted. God said, he's a man after my own heart. He's just like me in what I feel. That is the inheritance. And what did David get? He got kingship for his whole family line over the same territory that God promised Abraham. So the inheritance continued on. It was passed through on to David at this point. Now, of course, it gets passed on again. Well, the reason I'm bringing that up is that the physical land is a marker. You can find out who inherited it, kind of who owns the land that God has blessed. That tells you who the inheritor is, who owns it, who's physically there. We continue on. God didn't stop with just selecting the Messiah as firstborn. We know, don't get me wrong, he is his firstborn son. But he selected a lot more people than just that. He included a lot more people. He included individual tribes in later generations. Because if I select a tribe or a nation at a given moment in time, what happens when their descendants don't know anything about me, couldn't care less who I was? I am worthless to them. Are they still my firstborn as well? Sort of. God actually, he already demonstrated he can select individuals by selecting David from saying Levites were all his firstborn in replacement. He can select individuals that are not Levites. He can also select individuals amongst a nation. He does it again in Jeremiah. In Jeremiah, chapter 31, get there here real quick. Actually, nothing's very quick. All right. We will start in verse 7. Thus says the Lord, sing with gladness for Jacob, and shout among the chief of the nations. Proclaim, give praise, and say, O Lord, save your people, the remnant of Israel. Behold, I will bring them from the north country, and gather them from the ends of the earth, among them the blind and the lame, the one with child, and the one who labors with child, together. A great throng shall return here. They shall come with weeping, and the supplications I will lead them, and I will cause them to walk by the rivers of water, in a straight way in which they shall not stumble, for I am a father to Israel, and Ephraim is my firstborn. Well, that's funny. God just changed his firstborn, didn't he? Well, what happened to all the other ones? What happened to the Levites? That was like 800 years earlier than when he's making this statement in Jeremiah. Well, not 800, probably 600 years earlier. Meaning that a firstborn is a firstborn until they're dead. And guess what? They've already been counted. Their descendants are not necessarily continuing on firstborn. They can be, but not necessarily. They have to be counted as well. God demonstrated that with Abram. Ishmael was not the firstborn, though he was a descendant. Esau was not the firstborn selected from God, though he was the firstborn son of Isaac. Just because Abram gets a blessing doesn't mean every descendant from there on gets the same blessing. God selects the ones he's choosing. And this is an example of him selecting a group of people generations afterward. That these are my firstborn. I am selecting this group. Now he also actually explicitly states so a little later on. This is in Hosea. He gives a little more detail of the fact, just because he selected you, doesn't mean you, for all descendants, get to be there, are always selected. Hosea chapter 9. See, I'll go through verse 10. Let's just start with verse 10 for now. Just leave verse 10. This is Gospel of God speaking. I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I saw your fathers as the first fruits on the fig tree in the first season. But they went to Baal Peor and separated themselves to that shame. They became an abomination like the thing they loved. As for Ephraim, their glory shall fly away like a bird. No birth, no pregnancy, no conception. Though they bring up their children, yet I will bereave them to the last man. And yes, woe to them when I depart from them. Just as I saw Ephraim like Tyre, planted in a pleasant place, so Ephraim will bring out his children to the murderer. Does that sound like God still wanted them as his firstborn? Doesn't sound like it to me. So their fathers were.
Where are you?
This is Hosea chapter 9, verses 10 through 13. Oh, I apologize. Hosea. Israel was once the firstborn, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Are they here, firstborn now in Hosea? No, they're not. That generation, or this generation he's referring to, lost it. Why? Because they went to Baal Peor. They rejected God. They said, God, I want you somebody else. They despised their birthright, which was an inheritance to them, and they despised it. So they can lose it. You can lose your firstborn status. So what happens then to those of us who are alive today who are not some descendant of some important firstborn of anything? I don't own Israel today. I never probably will because land's so stinking expensive. I can't even afford to live around here. So I'm not going to be able to buy a piece of property and somehow wiggle my way in that way. Well, Micah gives us a little bit more information about how people who are not necessarily Israelites can actually also be a firstborn. They can also be selected. This is Micah, chapter 7. Let's see, we'll just go to verse 1 and 2. Woe is me, for I am like those who gather summer fruits, like those who glean vintage grapes. There is no cluster to eat. Of the first ripe fruit which my soul desires, the faithful man has perished from the earth. There is no one upright among men. They all lie in wait for blood. Every man hunts his brother with a net. That's an odd place for me to be going to, but why do you think I went to this particular verse? Well, it tells you. Of the first ripe fruit which my soul desires, the faithful man has perished from the earth. The first ripe fruit is the faithful man. Mm-hmm. My soul desires it, and yet it's missing. There is no one upright among men. They lie in wait for blood. Every man hunts his brother with a net. So what is Micah telling us here? Well, he's telling us the same story that we've been listening to and reading and looking at through Genesis and through Exodus and Numbers and Jeremiah. It seems that the one God's choosing as being that first fruit, the firstborn, the one that gets the inheritance, were they horrible people? Were they evil people? No, they weren't, were they? They were actually upright people. They're actually people who God wanted, people who God selected. They were chosen people because of who they were and what they did. They were valuable to God. So it tells us that it's not necessarily the physical attachment to Abraham that you need. It's the upright attachment. That's what you need. Now, does that mean that God will select you if you're upright? Maybe, maybe not. That's his choice. But the point is, that is a prerequisite. You cannot be selected unless you are upright to start with, in God's eyes. We won't stop there. Go to Jeff's territory real quick. This is in, let's see. I think I'll go to, do you go to James first? Bless you. No, I think I'll go to Romans first. Romans chapter 8. This is chapter 8, verses 18 through I think I'll probably stop. I'll just start with 18. I'll stop part on 26. For I consider the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly awaits the revealing of the sons of God. Stop there for a minute. Repeat that again. For the earnest expectation of the creation, this is all of God's creation, eagerly awaits the revealing of the sons of God. Who are the sons of God? The firstborn. They're the ones God selected. Who are they? All creation is looking for this. It doesn't say revealing of the Son of God. We already know who the Messiah is. This is sons, plural. These are the ones which God has been selecting over the generations, year after year after year. Yes, Susan.
Well, that fits in with I think it's Paul that talks about Christ as the firstborn amongst many brethren.
Exactly. Amongst many brethren, they're all going to be, not all, but the brethren get selected as well. All right, an apple tree, you select one apple, what happens to the rest of the apples? Well, you harvest them also. You don't leave them on the tree and let them rot, do you? Just because you select the first one doesn't mean there aren't more to come. And all creation is waiting for that selection, for that revealing. Who is it? What is the plan? What's God want them to do? Continuing on. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. Because the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs together until now. And not only they, but we also, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, eagerly awaiting for the adoption and the redemption of our body. Stop there for a minute. We, within ourselves, eagerly awaiting for the adoption, the redemption of our body. Well, if you're firstborn, you don't need to be adopted, right? If you're not a firstborn, you do, though, don't you? If you want to be counted, and you're not part of the inheritance, you're not part of the process, your goal is to be counted, right? Well, how do you get to become a son of God unless he adopts you, he selects you, he includes you? And how do you do that? We don't have control over that. All we have control over is the upright life, the one that Micah told us about. When God desires the first ripe fruit for us to raise our hands, yeah, we're first ripe. We will be upright. You can select us. That's the goal. We want to be counted, right? That's the fundamental goal of being, of celebrating any of God's holy days. Celebrating him at all, or even acknowledging his existence, is to be counted. Well, that's how you get counted. Yeah, he started out with Abram and went through the steps of generation to generation and expanded them to all of Israel. They took the firstborn of Israel and replaced it with Levites. And notice an exchange can happen. A change can occur. Well, if a change can occur, then I have some influence to help facilitate his change into selecting me. I was just born, all right? Born a child, didn't do nothing, didn't know anything. My parents happened to have taught me some stuff, right? That's pretty much all I've got. That's the only claim I have to fame, is that I know a little bit of information. Had I been born to anybody else, any other family, would I have that same information?
No,
they have the same faith. Maybe.
I mean, really, only if God does something extraordinary.
Exactly, and pulls me. Exactly, steps and makes an intervention, changes it so I can be included. Same happens to each one of us.
Well,
yes, Susan.
Israel at Mount Sinai, in the Talmud and in rabbinic teaching, they say that God asks all the other nations, right?
Yes,
but
yes, and they all said no.
You get
right.
The seed of that understanding in that, because it's only Israel that says, I will, mm-hmm. we will.
Well,
so in other
yes.
words, it was that longing communally for that particular people, and with an upright heart, right wanting.
The desire. Which is
that desire
it was Abram's desire.
God.
There's a
they were adopted.
Yes, they were adopted. There was another Midrash story about the God had gone around and asked a bunch of individuals before he found Abraham, of course. Same principle.
Yeah.
And the thing is that when you finally said, we look down, looking from outside and look at it, all right, God's speaking to Abraham, I'm going to have you go over this country, I'm going to have you try to kill your son for me. All right. But the rest of us would put him in a straitjacket. So you're crazy. You're not going to kill your child for a God which we can't see, don't know who he is, can't see and don't know anything about him. We wouldn't let you do that. You're crazy, Abram. Go back home. But he needed that desire. The desire to be included.
Yeah.
And Abram had it. That's why God blessed him and said, hey, because you're faithful, because you select, because you want it, you are righteous to me. It doesn't matter what you did or didn't do. It doesn't matter how clean or unclean you are. You were selected. That's bottom line. You want to be selected. To have the faith of Abraham. Say, all right, God, yeah, this is going to be hard. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm lost most of the time. But I'm going to choose to follow you anyway. What do you want as we're reading here? So yeah, anyway, finishing off my thing. Adopted. You have to be adopted because you're not part of the family to begin with. Adoption brings you in. For we were saved to this hope, but hope is... The hope that is seen, of course, is not hope, for why you wouldn't hope for one that is still seen, that is seen. But if we hope for what we do not see, then we eagerly wait for it with perseverance. Likewise, the Spirit also helps us in our weaknesses, for we do not know what we should pray for as we ought, but the Spirit makes intercession for us with the groanings which cannot be uttered. Just because we may not necessarily know what we need to be that upright individual doesn't necessarily mean that God doesn't count us upright. Because we still have a spirit in it. It still helps us along our own path. We're going to end with James. Yes, there's firstborn referred to in Revelations, but that's a separate category, which I don't want to get into today. It's actually quite an interesting category, but it takes a little bit more time to discuss that. It takes a lot more time to discuss that. So James chapter 1. This is verse 17, 18. James 1, verse 17, 18. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above. Do we know that? And comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. Of his own will, he brought us forth by the word of truth, that we may be a kind or type of first fruits to all his creatures. So God pours out that spirit which Paul talks about in Romans, which helps along our way during our times of weaknesses. It's a good gift, right? That gift, which comes down from God, that's what we use, that we might be a kind of first fruit to all his creation. We might be included and be beneficial to those around us. Because as we mentioned when we first started out in the little speech today, the first fruit requires responsibility that comes with it, right? It requires leadership, requires guidance, requires the ability to impart what God has blessed you with to the next person. That birthright gets expanded, gets passed on. That we'd be a kind of first fruits to all of his creatures, to all of his creation. To each one of them can look at somebody and say, hey, that person is counted, and I want to be counted as well. So first fruits is actually a very important season. It's an important holy day, a holy time, I should say. It's quite a few weeks long. And we're coming to the end of it next week. I want you just to focus and recall, what does it mean to be a first fruit? What does it mean in your own personal life? What does it mean that God counted you? And what does it mean to you to prevent yourself from losing that counting? Those are important things we always ask ourselves. The whole concept, once saved, always saved. I'm sorry, but I don't buy that. God didn't either. Once saved, no, you have to maintain that. If you say, all right, thanks God for saving me, now bug off, I don't care about you, you become Esau.
Yeah, that's
crazy. Are you still saved then? Well, Esau wasn't. Why would any of us be? We're no better than he was. So birthright and first fruits being counted is important to all of us. We do our best to maintain that. We also have to do our best to make sure that we expound that to others and don't lose it ourselves. Thank you for your time. That was a little different than what I normally talk about, but it was kind of fun. I think it's important because I know next week my father's taking the whole time, but he'll be discussing all of Shavuot, which will be elaborate. And there are other examples of first fruits and people throwing their hats in as well. Ruth, the whole book of Ruth is an example. That's someone who has no inheritance, no right whatsoever to be part of anything that God has. She threw her hat in because she believed. She wanted it. And what happened? Well, great-great-grandmother, whatever, of David, and then continuing on the whole life. She brought in an entirely Gentile nation who had once fought against God and against his people. Actually, quite a few thousand people died the battles of Moab and Israel. She brought in, and not the whole nation didn't follow her, but she's an example of one who brought in that's completely outside. But by choosing to follow the God of Israel is now counted. Hope this inspires all of us.